Yo, welcome to a bonus episode of Techish. We're meant to be on the summer break and we've got good news and bad news. Unfortunately, Abadisi is not here. She's in Lagos, Nigeria. Shout out Nigeria. But I do have a special guest in her place and I will let her do the introduction.
Ooh, who should I be today?
Anybody you want.
Who should I be? Well, I'm American. We'll start there.
Yep.
Yes.
I'm American too. You didn't know?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
What gave me away?
That's the first clue. I don't know how to set that up. This is Arlen Hamilton from Gimlet Media, and you may remember me from Different Strokes.
We didn't have that here, yeah. No, but I know of it.
Television's Different Strokes. It's Arlen. Hi.
What's up? And we're recording in London. What brings you to these colder climates?
London. I was here in February,
mm-hmm.
and was here with a few members of our team, our crew, and we had a great time. We were set up to meet a lot of founders and people in the ecosystem, and had to come back. And so we were working on a special project.
Oh, can you give us an exclusive or like a hint or a tip?
Well, even saying special project is
too much.
Is so far beyond what I was supposed to say. I tend to do that these days, though. But we're working on something special that would be that would have Backstage coming back a few times over the next 12 months.
Intriguing.
Yeah, but I can tell you about it once we can talk about it.
When would that be? Right now?
No.
I'm trying.
No, what is this? This is like end of May?
End of May.
A couple weeks.
A couple weeks?
I can give you a little...
Shoot me an email. Me and Abadesi will drop it on the...
Sure.
On the thing. So how have you found London? Like, what have you noticed about the ecosystem? Hey, I know you've only been a few times, but is there anything that's come out of you straight away?
Well, so I've been to London itself many, many times, especially on tour with musicians when I used to, in my other life.
We'll get into your backstory soon.
Yeah. But February when I came back, it was expressly to visit with founders here and to talk to investors and limited partners who invest in funds. And, it was a great setup because I got to talk to different people from people who this is their life. Venture capital is their life. They, you know, work on this every day, to people who are just learning about what a term sheet is,
and
what a cap table is, and running the gamut. And I just think there's a lot of richness here. There's a lot there's a lot of soil to till, if that's the way to say it. You know, it just seems really like fertile ground for some great innovation already happening. And even more so, I think that if we can combine what Backstage is doing in the States, I think it could be interesting.
So you do see like an opportunities like out here? Yeah,
I do. And people have asked me about many places, you know, many places outside of the United States have been asking for us to come there. And we can't do it all.
Yeah.
And we're very bullish on the U.S. There are many, you know, you think about the U.S., you think about venture capital, you think about startups in general.
Absolutely.
You usually think about California, San Francisco, you think about New York, Boston. But there's so much in between the coasts. And so if we only worked on the U.S. for the rest of our lives,
you'd have enough to do.
We'd have enough to do.
Yeah.
But there are some places that are special that I think what I love about London is that there's so many people from other places here.
Yeah.
And that you can, it's just this melting pot that you can reach a lot of different people that you might not be able to do if you went to some of the other cities.
Yeah, everyone's from somewhere out here.
Yeah.
Yeah, you would struggle to meet an actual quote-unquote English person. I've had people say that to me, like, I want to meet an English person, but I can't find them out here. Anyways, so I think it does speak to the hunger for what you're doing, that so many other countries are saying, please, we need you here.
Yeah.
Like, so it's a global problem, but also, you know, like you said, you want to focus specifically on the US. So I want to go back a bit.
Mm-hmm. Who am
take
I?
Me, yeah, take me all the way back.
You start there.
We're going back. And I've always wanted to know, actually, when you had the idea for, okay, this is what I want to do, what was the first thing that you did?
Cried. I'm going to be a venture capitalist. Oh, no. The first thing that I did was... it didn't happen overnight. So it's a little hard to say the first thing, but I studied. Just started my education. I had to. You said you were listening to the Gimlet podcast.
Yeah.
It just came out, this fourth episode.
Which is dope, by the way. It was really good. I really loved it.
Thank you. We're going to record our reaction episode. Look at all this. This is all meta. So
it's so meta,
we're
yeah.
We're going to record our reaction to that episode of the GimletMedia.com podcast of Startup. We record reaction podcast to it.
Your own one, right?
Yeah, okay. Bootstrapped VC.
Oh, wow.
So we're doing that a little later today.
And
so I have a lot percolating in my head about it. But they did talk about, you know, just all of the studying and the work that needed to go into understanding venture capital before I could set out to really do something. And then part of it, though, was I was saying that the people, the old guard, the people who were already there, were doing a fine job, and they still are, but that perhaps they needed to have a little bit more of a shakeup when it came to the perspectives that were being in the lenses.
Mm.
And so some of it couldn't be taught. The majority of it, I guess, couldn't be taught.
Mm.
So I wanted to understand the rules in order to know which ones to break.
I see. So when did you feel confident enough to be like, you know, how many months was it where you're like, okay, now I'm ready to start sending emails, start hustling, and like when did the quote unquote?
I mean, I started sending emails really early, and they were mostly because I was like, I'm learning, so I'd like to learn from you. I'd like to learn. You know, these are the emails that I get today, and I understand where they're coming from, and always thought about adding value. You add value or offer value as you take. So
how do you offer value when you're a complete outsider? You haven't got any connections. You haven't done anything up until then in that world. How do you offer value? Like, it's such a hard thing to wrap your mind around.
The thing that I was setting out to do, again, being disruptive and looking at venture from a different lens. So the value add was at the time when I had nothing. I had nothing to offer them when it came to like, oh, I can do your, you know, spreadsheets and can go out. I offered them perspective.
Mm.
I offered them access.
Mm.
And the way I looked at it was, let me, and I cringe at the thought now, but it really is kind of the closest thing I can compare it to at the time. I think about it as being their caddy.
Mm.
Because I can, you know, put the grass up in the air and tell them which way the wind is blowing, and tell them which club to use because of this and that. And that was what I was offering, was this, like, you are, if you believe me at all, then there's a trend happening and it's going to happen in the future.
Mm.
And I can see it now. Let me navigate that for you.
Mm.
What is the cartography?
You know,
let me navigate that landscape for you even before you know you need to know it.
Mm.
And I offered that to a lot of people, and it wasn't at the time, they just didn't buy it, you know, they just didn't think that was necessary. Now you fast forward 3-4 years, everybody
is hollering at you now.
Not just me, but just in general, everyone knows they need to be thinking about diversity.
So how do we avoid it becoming almost like a momentary trend where it's the hot new thing and then, you know, it just goes by the wayside after a couple of years?
Well, I've said, you know, one of the things that I feel I can do and offer today to founders besides capital is the truth.
Yeah.
Or my honesty. Maybe it's not the truth, but it's my
perspective.
It's my perspective and honesty. And I have said in the past that I do think it's going to be this trendy thing to invest in Black and Brown founders.
Mm.
It just as it's been for women, it'll be this trendy thing that does go away.
Mm.
So I think it's important for us, as that's happening, to take full advantage of it.
Mm.
Not to be reckless and not to be, you know, just doing whatever you can just to get some money.
Yeah.
But if you're working on something that you're really passionate about or you're thinking about doing that, to know that that's happening and that probably will happen. I used to say that Black is the new Bitcoin because I think all of this work that everyone is working on, including Backstage Capital, my fund, I think it's going to lead to a lot of money being spent on Black founders, which is awesome. I think that'll happen between now and middle to end of 2020. And then I think as fast as it came in,
it'll
disappear. And the way that, so the way that we counter that, one is by knowing it, anticipating it, being aware. The second is by enabling and catalyzing angel investors and VCs who are of color.
Yeah.
So today, we can't wait till it runs out, because then it'll be too late. But as we do that now, so if people look at Backstage Capital and say, oh, I want to do that. Great. That's why I'm doing it. Great. I want there to be competition. I want there to be dozens of us. So as they do that, and then as we're talking to more of the larger funds, and they're hiring more women now, they're getting it. There was a day like a couple of weeks ago where four women were hired as partners or principals at VC funds, including at Backstage, Lolita. But three others on the same day were announced. That wouldn't have been heard of 2 years ago, because you wouldn't have had enough of them to be hired to have an announcement that more than one, it was like, oh, I have to keep up now.
Yeah.
So we keep cultivating, keep nurturing that. Those larger funds absolutely need to, they have to, there's no question, they need to be investing in people. And not just in companies, they need to be investing in their people. They need to be investing in their next generation of talent that is writing the checks, if they want to be around. There's some people who don't care about being around past 5 years. They just don't care. But if they are someone that is looking at the long game, like their hero, Warren Buffett, or their hero. I'm sorry, I don't know.
No, it's cool. Don't worry.
Is it water or something, maybe? You can speak.
Yeah, don't worry. We'll cut it out.
Anastasia's like here, and she's miming to me. Anastasia is all the way from California. Thank you.
Buxton.
Where'd you get this from?
My hotel.
Oh, wow.
Where are you guys staying?
Look at this.
Leicester Square area.
Leicester Square. Oh, yeah.
I said it right.
Yeah, you got it right. What did you say before? Leicester Sire. Like, people always mangle. That's a hard one, though.
I'm like, I'm trying to get you.
Yeah, you guys are right in the middle of the madness. That's like, that's tourist central. And like, East London is kind of like startup hipster, like, kind of. Yeah.
We'll remember for next time.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if this is any better out here. It's just like, it gets kind of annoying. It's
Yeah.
You see enough beards and skin jeans and like, that's it. Like,
beards and backpacks.
Basically,
woo!
Yeah, pretty much. Yes. I'm struggling
like
with mine.
It's like Brooklyn.
Pretty much.
You're working on it.
I'm trying. Yeah. I just turned 30 and it's still not there, so I've given up. So it's not happening for me.
It's getting there.
One day, God willing. So where were we? Yeah, so good.
Right here. And you don't have to edit out, except
why not? Keep it in.
Me choking over here. Edit that out. I just think that you, in order for you there to be a solution, you have to admit there's a problem.
Yeah.
And that's just 101, you know.
And is that happening? Are there still a percentage of people that are just like, there's no problem, you know, we're investing?
Oh, sure. There's a percentage, but it's a minority now.
It's getting smaller, you think?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's definitely getting, at least from what I can see, and I get to see a lot of it. And I get to see the Twitter version, and I get to see the real version.
Break that down for us. What does that mean?
The Twitter version is what people need, what VCs and investors need you to think of them.
Yeah.
And then the real version is what's actually happening. Who is actually writing the checks? Who's actually hiring? Who's actually answering requests for things that will move the needle?
Yeah, I get it.
It's a very different landscape behind the scenes. But more and more, those two worlds are matching up because you have more accountability.
And have you seen a shift since you've been in the quote unquote game? Like, you've seen a shift?
Yeah, I definitely have. When people ask me if I've seen any change, any positive change, you have to know that if I didn't, I wouldn't be able to keep going.
Yeah, real talk.
Because it's very, this is not an easy game.
Yeah,
as it were.
But I mean, in a sense that, for example, with your work, you might be having an impact.
No,
but in terms of the industry at large.
That's what I mean.
That's what you mean, right?
If I didn't see it at large, I would be very, I'm sure I would be doing something that would be towards entrepreneurs in some way, but it probably would go towards media more.
Yeah.
If I didn't see that actually, oh, wow, like, not just our work, but people are actually, like, guys, like, white men are actually changing their behavior based on what they're understanding. And not all of them, but some of them. And if I, you know, when I see that, I feel hope. And I think hope is, on the podcast you were on.
Yeah.
You were featured on our podcast recently.
Yeah, we were. Thank you so much for that. We were so happy.
That was great. I love that. I mean, you know, flattery will get you everywhere. No, but
we were being honest, though. We weren't even, like, we're not out here to flatter. We were like, this is real
talk.
We were like, shout this out. Like, we've got to. And
I loved it because, and that's why I added it to the end of the episode about hope. Because you all broke it down, and I love hearing the different perspectives of what we're doing, because I only see it from my, I can only see it from my perspective.
Yeah.
I can imagine it from others, but to hear it from, you know, broken down from different places, and especially like out of a different country, and then that motivates us at backstage. Wouldn't you agree, Anastasia?
That's dope. We were just so excited that you even heard it. We were like, oh wow, like, she heard it, and now, and then we got the email saying, you want to fit? We were like,
yeah.
And then when you said that you want to come down, perhaps, and I realized that she couldn't make it. Like, I think she almost shed a tear. Like, she was so upset. No. Like,
I'm going to see her soon.
Yeah.
We'll meet up.
Yeah,
we'll meet
but yeah, she would love that.
Record
yeah.
something.
Shout out to Abba in Nigeria.
Yeah.
So in terms of the changing in perception from, you know, the straight white male VC, is it out of self-interest, do you think, now they're realizing it? Or where is it stemming from?
More than one place.
More than one place. Okay.
Just like most things.
Yeah.
Lots of self-interest.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't know how much I can fault someone right now as a white man for looking out for self-interest by investing in black people.
Yeah.
Because that's actually what we've been asking
them. I mean, that's what
we
need, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. For it to be sustainable, it has to be within their self-interest to do
it,
right?
So we're asking them to change their behavior and to think, you know, open the scope of how they're looking at things. And then if they do it, we're then mad at them because they're just placating. No, I think it's, if we ask for it, we should be open to the way that they change. I think when I have the issue, very honestly and openly, it's when someone will tweet or write a think piece on Medium and talk about diversity and the needs and this and that. And then I just know personally that
it's BS.
Yeah, that they don't practice that in life. But they have all the kudos and the snaps. And I like it for what it is, because it does get out there, and it does, you know, the more people who can read words that like that, the better. But you see, like, when you know someone, it's almost like when someone's like a self-help guru, but you know their life is in shambles.
Yeah.
And you're just like, well, why don't you...
I feel like you want to call out some people. We got any names here, like, or is it we kind of?
No, it's a lot of people.
It's too many to name.
It's a lot of people, and I don't think it's like the point of no return for them. I think they can still kind of turn it around. I'll tell you the people that I like who are doing things. I'll do the opposite.
Go on, yeah.
Like,
let's keep it positive.
This dude Bryce at OATV or OATV. He does indie VC.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I like, you know what I like about him? So first of all, I like, and I mean, who knows in this landscape, like a year from now, we could find out that he has, like, you know, skeletons under his house, but who knows? But but what I like from what I can tell and from, you know, on and offline is one thing is that he wrote this Medium post like a year or two ago about his daughter's privilege, like what is he teaching his daughter?
Yeah.
You know, which I thought was so great. And that he recognized, like, not that it wasn't hard for me. Like, I'm smart and I had to like pass, but I did have a lot of privilege here, and that's okay to admit. And it's okay to teach my daughter that exists and that she can use her privilege. And in some cases she doesn't have it because she's a woman or a girl, you know, that was really interesting. But then on top of that, he doesn't do a lot of his own bell ringing. He does some, but he doesn't do a ton. He does a lot of amplification, which is smart. And he also sponsors things quietly.
Yeah.
He'll put money and sponsor things that have where he is not going to get the accolades for it.
Yeah.
He'll just
stop.
Make it happen.
Mm.
And so I probably just outed him now, but that's all good. So I'm not, again, I don't throw parades for straight white men doing what they're supposed to do.
Absolutely.
I just don't have it in me.
Yeah.
But I do think it's an example of someone who can do so. So if you're listening and you want to up your game, one of the things you can do is underwrite something without getting the praise for it.
Yeah. Without the fanfare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one great way to do it.
That reminds me of, I was listening to you with Jason Calacanis, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically saying how, for the longest time, he felt that he was the underdog and was, you know, because he was economically slightly disadvantaged and he was from Brooklyn or whatever.
Yeah.
He felt like, you know, like I'm... had to fight my way in and blah, 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 blah. And thankfully in the episode, he did kind of say that, you know,
he figured it out slowly, right?
Mm-hmm. But how many people are not on that journey and don't care and don't figure it out and are not blind to, you know, the privileges that they do have?
Yeah. I think, yeah, Calacanis is a very specific case. I think he's someone, he may agree with me here, that he is thinking about his best interests when he does these calculated moves.
Yeah.
Because I think that's what he does with everything.
Yeah.
I think, there's a lot to still talk to with him about, and you know that's a whole other game. But what was the question?
There wasn't a lot of spitballing.
Okay,
your face is a million words though.
Yeah.
So let's take it back to backstage.
Well, let me back up a second.
Yeah,
I do have to stop and say I'm not putting a fine period on my opinion of Calacanis. I'm saying that it's not black and white with him.
Mm. Okay. Okay, yeah. Cool. So let's switch it back to backstage.
Backstage.
We can add that in if like, I can get some choir in
there. Oh, yeah.
We can do that. We got production
Janine,
values.
Just play Janine. Janine's album drop.
So I'm sure you get this question all the time, but what is the long-term vision? Because I was listening to the Gimlet podcast and you mentioned the Venture Studio.
No, they mentioned the video.
They mentioned the video.
Yeah,
okay.
let's get it right.
So was that not meant to be dropped?
They're painting a picture. Yeah, they have a story to tell. And so
I see.
So the Venture Studio is absolutely a
real.
Big... Oh, it's real.
It's a real thing.
It's a big
yeah.
part of what we do. All of the... everyone you see on the Backstage Capital website is employed by Studio.
Oh, I see.
Studio is the engine, the hub.
Oh, I see.
Of Backstage. And it's part of the big picture.
Yeah.
And it's what will... enable the big picture, in my view.
So if you're someone like me who's a bit obtuse, like what is the distinction between a venture studio and a general like VC firm now?
Believe me, there's like one or three people in Silicon Valley who know.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, so what a venture studio can be a few things, but in our case, we modeled it after BetaWorks.
Oh yeah.
Science.
Yeah.
Pioneer Square Labs.
Yeah.
Expa,
yeah,
Human Ventures, those places. You can look all of those up, and you can see the model.
Yeah,
and it's just essentially a place that pulls its resources,
yeah,
to incubate and launch,
yeah,
products,
yeah,
and then some of those products or features will go on to become full fledged companies that are incorporated themselves, and the people who started it in the lab, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Some will go on and spearhead that.
Okay.
I can actually give you a great example. She's sitting
Right
next to me.
Woo.
Anastasia's here.
Come on the mic. Tell us about your company. What are you working on?
She's at Studio and working on something out of Studio.
Yeah, let's go.
So I'll be working on The Door, and hopefully I'll be launching, can I say this?
Yeah.
Hopefully this summer.
Exclusive.
Yes, exclusive here on Techish. So The Door essentially will be like a premier one-stop shop for underestimated founders to educate themselves, get the resources they need, and sort of hear those things that they can't find easily online, looking at various resources and trying to piece together what can help them build their successful entrepreneurship journey. And so... yeah, I'm really excited to do that. I've worked on some side projects myself, and this is basically a resource I wish I had.
That's dope.
So I'm definitely going to be building it for, you know, even my interest too. Like, I want to help other people get to where they want to be.
Yeah.
It's within Studio.
Okay, cool. Yeah, let us know when it's dropping. I would love to feature that on peopleofcolorintech.com, and we always interview, like, founders of color and, like, all cool new products, so that'll be dope.
Thank you.
Yeah, look forward to that. So...
So that's one example.
That's one example of
what we're building at Studio. So yeah. We work on several things at once.
Yeah.
It can be an idea on a whiteboard, or it can be something that is just a skeleton of the tech is being made by someone while someone else looks at it and says, oh, that, you know, over the last couple of weeks, that's really developed. We should keep going with that.
Yeah.
Or it could be a full-fledged website that has a full team, which is more what the door is. Mm. It's much further along than a lot of things. And we also, you know, so what we'll do with the door is there is a revenue component to it when it comes to investors.
Mm.
And we'll build it out over the next 18 months or so because it has reached the point. It's kind of like that Back to the Future, you know. Never mind.
I get it. I'm a big fan of Back to the Future. Like I said, none of that is lost on me.
Yeah,
I get it.
Yeah. Kind of blank.
My girlfriend rented the car for my 30th, so it was real. It was,
wow.
I was gassed. I was really excited.
That's so cool. Yeah. Oh, man.
Shout out to my girlfriend.
Yeah, shout out. She should be here. It's awesome. So, because we're working on a few things, we don't put a ton of financial resources into each thing.
Yeah.
One or two people may work on it for a certain amount of hours per week and be working on a bigger picture elsewhere.
Oh, I see.
And so we are able to test things and kind of see if they work or not. And then if they are not working, we leave them.
Yeah.
And you have to know that going in. You have to have that, okay, even if I get attached to it, if it's not working, it's not for Studio.
Mm.
So people have these projects. So just imagine if you worked at a company and in addition to what you did on a day-to-day basis, you could also work on your side hustle, but the company was paying for it.
I wish.
That's what Studio is. And so from that, a lot of great things come from that. And so the door is something that we incubated. We brought Anastasia in to then take over the management of it and see where she can go with the next 12 to 18 months and see what that turns into with us backing it. We'll spin it out and go and see where it goes and see what kind of...
So how do you juggle all of that as well as your check writing abilities to other external startups and stuff? Like, is it a lot or is it like,
it's a lot.
I can imagine.
It's a lot. We have a 19 person team and that's not enough.
Oh, Lord.
Like it's a lot of work. The thing is, I think what people may not understand yet and what we're trying to explain, and Gimlet does touch on this in their own special way, is that we are a startup.
Yeah.
Backstage Capital is a startup.
Yeah.
Backstage Studio is a startup.
Yep, yep.
I am a startup founder. We call ourselves the bootstrapped VC.
Yeah.
So it's not like we have all this money that we're throwing and seeing what'll work.
Yeah.
It is about, like, how do we keep this going?
Yeah.
Because we're having such an impact and it is working. And we know that we will start having returns that will catch us later.
Yeah.
Because a VC firm... usually, no matter who's running it, the first 5 years are about making bets and about nurturing those bets.
Mm.
You don't start seeing returns for years.
Yep.
So you don't know if an investor is good or not. You're good at choosing years. Usually, there's a very small number of outliers who will have like Instagram, goes platinum in 12 months. But usually it's this long process. The way that is usually sustained is that the fund is large enough where the management fee, the 2% or whatever management fee you have, is every year, and it's enough to sustain what's going on. But because of the way that I came into venture capital, the way that I raised, and the amount that I raised compared to other VCs, we don't have that same infrastructure.
Mm.
So the studio, to me... it may sound like a distraction to others, and I think I'm going to talk about this too. Like it may sound like a distraction to others, but to us, it is the engine that is keeping everything else. All the stuff, all the headlines you see, all the fun stuff, the good stuff you see, wouldn't be made possible if we didn't have Studio running it because it's operations.
Mm.
And so any of those things like the door, when you think about the door, it's not a distraction. It's a revenue stream for the next 3 years while we're waiting on our returns to come in.
Yeah.
In 5 years, I will be a very wealthy person.
Whoop, whoop.
It's just true. I will be very wealthy.
Definitely keeping your email. I'm joking. I'm just joking.
But it's true. So my problems will be different problems.
Yeah, yeah.
They will still be problems.
Yeah.
But they will be different. And they won't have so much to do with keeping the doors open to backstage. How do we get the lights on?
Yeah.
Right now, that is the question, how do you keep the lights on in something that has not been tried before?
Yeah.
While also taking in all of everyone's opinions and also thinking about our portfolio and putting them first.
Yeah.
So the answer is that I think that over the next 12 months, our team will double in size.
Wow.
12 to 18 months, I should say. By the end of next year, our team would have doubled from the 19 that it is.
Okay. So if you're looking for a job, everybody.
Hang tight.
Hang tight. Okay.
If you're looking for, yeah. But, you know, it will double. I still don't think it'll be enough. Mm. I think that a lot of times people get a lot of funding, which I think we've already started, and I think we're going to get a substantial amount of funding over the next 18 months as well.
Amazing.
So that's going to be interesting. But because of the brick by brick way that I've built this, I'm not going to be the one going crazy getting the jacuzzi in the office, you know, because I've worked so hard for this.
Mm.
So it's about, oh, great. Now, great. We know we have runway.
Mm.
And what may appear to be just going all out, like, oh, my God, your team is 20 people? Yeah, but it should be 40.
Mm.
We do the work of 40.
Mm. You can damn well imagine.
Can you, Anastasia's going to...
Tell him. Talk to the people.
So specifically this week, I can attest to needing more people. So I was on the road with Arlen as of Tuesday, hitting Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Unexpected trip for me.
Mm.
Already had some planned out events and everything happening for Arlen. And I was by myself assisting her for my first travel date with her.
Oh, wow.
So on the ground in another country, you know, traveled before, which is great. But just navigating the day and I was alone again for the first time, I'm like, okay, I could definitely use two of me right now.
Yeah.
Or like three people total just to get around town.
Yeah.
And
we have so many deadlines.
Yes.
So many initiatives. And I was saying we have so many initiatives and deadlines that are happening at HQ, which HQ is a remote team, but I think about it being in the States.
Mm.
And this is all, nothing gets paused for me to go out and fundraise or me to go out and work with founders.
Mm.
The whole world doesn't stop because I'm doing something.
Mm.
So, and Anastasia did a great job, by the way. Still doing a great job. So she's juggling those two things. And then everybody on our team does like at least three things.
I can imagine. So she works for you. She's helping spin out a company.
That's right.
Lord have mercy.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
But I, you know, everyone is at backstage, I hope, with their free will.
Yeah.
I think
Blink
we're
if
having,
you don't want to be here.
I think we're having fun. Yeah. I think we're having fun. I think we're able to have impact. Mm, I know that when I worked
impact.
At... Yeah, well, I think when I worked at different companies, one of the things that really stole my spirit, I guess, was that I didn't feel like what I was doing had any impact on the company or anyone else. So I would go in, I'd clock in, I'd do the job, I'd clock out. The very next day, what I did the day before really didn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the types of jobs you would have.
Yeah.
And that used to like, I remember when I would clock in, it sounded like a bullet to me. I remember it very distinctly. It would just, and I was like, okay, now you're someone else. You belong to someone else.
Yeah,
and that's it. And I hate to be a bummer because I know a lot of people listening to this are nuts.
Stay strong,
but
people.
I was in that for like 20 years. So at Backstage, what I'm trying to cultivate internally, while thinking about everything else, what I am trying to cultivate when it comes to our employees, is I want everyone to feel like they definitely have ownership.
Yeah,
they do. And they have impact, and their voice matters, and then that they are all working themselves as entrepreneurs within a company.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is when I'll know we're too big, actually, is when that can't happen.
Yeah.
So if we get to the point where people are feeling like they're just a cog in the machine, we've grown too big.
Mm. What do you think that number would be, like 1,000 employees, 150? Or is it more of a mental shift?
It's definitely not the number. I mean, it would... I'll have to start thinking about this. I don't know how big a venture capital fund gets. I don't know how big a studio gets. A studio is a very different story. So I don't know if we cap at 40 and you will never get bigger than that and that's enough.
Mm.
Or if we're talking in 3 years and we're at 400. I don't know what the answer is. But I think that if it does go beyond, you know, as it goes right now, it's growing pains, you know, figuring out how do you go from 7 to 17. Boom.
Mm.
That happened overnight almost.
Mm.
So I think it's about the people who are working there now feeling like they have, and me empowering them with this sort of ownership of their own voice and their own take on the backstage mission, and then taking that and sort of instilling that in the next. So I think it definitely has to have to find a really good balance between me being sort of this voice of backstage, and like, when you think of backstage, you think of me. I need to find a balance of like, that's good in some ways, because a brand is really good for a VC firm. Firm. but also this balance of that, and like, it can stand on its own, even if I'm not in the room. And we actually had this conversation last night in London. Well, someone asked me, you know, as you expand and as you have these different, is that toilet paper over there? I just realized.
I think so, yeah. This place is really random. I've never been here before.
It's beautiful here. Don't get me wrong. I would not be sitting here if it wasn't run down. But it's catching me. I see a bonsai tree and some toilet paper, and I don't know where we are.
I don't know where we are either, to be honest. This isn't our usual studio. Okay. But people at home, just to let them know.
What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So they were asking last night, someone asked me last night, you know, as I expand, how do I basically clone myself and I'm everywhere because I need to be in the building to make the impact? And I said, well, if that's the case, I'm doing this wrong. It needs to be a point where I don't have to be in the building for backstage to make the impact. And I see that happening. And that's how I'll continue thinking about it as we grow.
So how do you juggle that with... and I was going to ask you about your media strategy. I use air quotes, but in a sense that...
Media strategy.
In a sense that you do have a podcast, and you guys laugh at my accent.
No, I'm laughing at my silly. We were like, we don't want to be those Americans over there.
Well, you tried doing it. Go on, try it. Do your best one. Let's hear it.
Well, my best one. I don't know. Oh, wow. I don't know why you're laughing at me.
It's not bad.
All right.
It's not bad. It's not bad. I've heard worse.
Yeah. Okay.
So I was going to say, so in terms of, I can't speak now because I'm self-conscious. But anyways, I'll push through.
No, please. I was just being silly.
So in terms of like your media strategy, how do you juggle wanting to make backstage scalable in a sense where you're not the face of it, but at the moment, obviously, you kind of are, and you have like a podcast, and, you know, you're very much out there. So like, how do you juggle that?
Start my own potato chip line. So there, believe it or not, there was a point earlier on where I didn't want any of these interviews. I didn't want any of this attention because I was like, it's called Backstage Capital for a reason. I didn't like it. So it's why I worked in backstage on concerts. And it's why I worked as a photographer because I like being behind the scenes.
Is that where it came from, the name?
Yeah, well, from working as on tour.
In music.
My mother actually came up with it.
Oh, that's so dope.
She's a genius. but it was in August of 2016, Sal Rodriguez did a report on me for Inc.
Okay.
And it was the first time someone was doing like this extensive, like I think we did like 4 interviews over like 2 weeks. It was this extensive profile.
Yeah.
And... during it, I briefly just mentioned, oh, yeah, you know, last year I was homeless. Like last, because that would have been 2016. So now it's now 3 years, but it was very fresh. I was living in a great apartment. I was happy, still working hard, but I was like not homeless. So I just mentioned it to him. And oh boy, that people like that in the press. Yeah. So what I said to him was, whatever you do, I know, because like he kept coming back to it. And I said, well, whatever. And he's a great guy, a good friend. But at the time, I was like, whatever you do, I do not want to wake up to the headline from homeless to
VC
Harvard.
I don't
want that because I don't want that attention on it.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed of it. But I don't want people to have this preconceived notion of me and feel like it takes away from the whole idea of like these are strong companies and... not everybody's down and out if you're black. And you have homeless to this. And he said, okay. So the day that it was going to come out, I wake up to homeless to Harvard.
Oh, Lord.
And he tells me, he's like, you know, my editor.
They took charge.
He heard it and they were like, they wouldn't have it any other way because it's such a compelling story.
Yeah.
So I read it. I called a couple of people that I trust. And I'm like, oh, God, I just don't. And everybody was freaking out. Like my phone was blowing up. Everything was blowing up. And someone wrote me and just said, like that day, and said, I'm homeless right now.
Mm.
I read your story and I can keep going.
Damn.
And you gave me that strength. And I was just like, whoa.
Wow.
Okay. And I had experienced something similar a few years prior with a blog I used to write for lesbians and lesbian adjacent women.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lot of people, like teenagers, who said that I stopped them from committing suicide because there was a voice out there. Mm. So it harkened back to that.
Mm.
And I said, wait a minute, like, I can be like all woe is me and say, don't tell my story and throw my shawl around and, you know, cover myself like the Hunchback of Notre Dame. Or I can, sorry, I like to say stuff to get Anastasia like, whoa, where did she get that from? I can do all of that. Or I can just like tell the truth and say, this is what happened. And this is, I guess some people are finding something out of it. And so I let go. And when I let go, when you have that story, as much as it was just something that I feel like I just had to do, it doesn't seem like this big heroic measure that everyone is talking about.
Mm.
It seems like I needed to do it. Like, so I did it. I put one foot in front of the other, had to do it. This is how we get here. I do see it now. I'm not going to be silly and say that I don't. Oh, I don't know what kind of impact. Oh, yeah, you were homeless and you started a company from scratch and now you've invested in almost 100 companies.
Yeah.
It's a big deal.
It really is.
So it's the story is a big deal.
Mm.
I am not.
Mm.
And that, if as long as I understand that, then I think I'll be okay.
Who do you want you to play in the movie?
Because
they're doing a Theranos movie, they better damn do a movie about this.
Oh my God. I was like, why are they doing that?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know. What's that guy who did My Two Left Feet?
I have no idea.
Daniel Day-Lewis. I would like Daniel Day-Lewis. He is a great character actor.
He is a great actor. I think he's retired.
Not character actor. He's a great, what do you call it when you...
Method actor?
Method actor.
There
he's a great method actor. I think he could do it.
I think he's retired now, though, so you might have to
pick
up. Yeah, he's done. Yeah, he's given up on the craft.
Well, then I guess it can't be
it's
a
over.
Movie
It's over. Movie canceled.
I don't know. I was thinking about it. Like, people keep saying Queen Latifah because we're both big boned. But she's older than I am, so I don't know exactly how that would work.
Mm.
But, yeah.
She could play you when you're, like,
Octavia.
A billionaire at the end.
Octavia could. We both have big eyes.
Yeah, that's another one.
Me and Octavia both have big eyes. I met her once, and she follows me on Twitter.
Oh, that's dope.
Something.
I
don't know. I think that, you know what I would rather see? I would rather, other than seeing, I still don't know if I want to see a story of mine. But I would like to, I am working on a couple of things where I'm going to produce.
Oh, see?
So, like, I can tell other people's stories through my lens.
Yeah.
I like that idea a lot.
You'll be backstage.
Backstage.
Pardon the fun.
Exactly. So
I'm listening.
Yeah,
I get
it.
Yeah, I get it. Behind the scenes. Yeah.
I enjoy that idea much more than, like, let's recreate you at the airport sleeping and you know, rationing grapes. Let's do
So normally me and Abba, we do like a section called Winners and Losers, and that's what we talk about today.
Uh-huh.
And we'll cut it down to like 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
And so I was going to bring up, I think everybody's the loser in terms of their inbox for this whole GDPR thing. I don't know what's been going on with, if in the American inbox is the same, but all I can say is that in the UK and in Europe, like every email is literally just like, we've updated our privacy. We've done, we're sorry. So in the States, like as somebody who invests in companies and starts companies, like how what was the impact for you guys over there, or was it?
Let me tell you, I didn't know about it.
Yeah,
I had no idea what was going on. That's a mixture of just me still not being super tech savvy.
Believe it or not,
and also just being on the run. And I don't know how well known it is in the U.S. before the email started.
Yeah.
So over here, everybody's talking about it.
Everybody's.
And I know that people at home are talking about it. Like, what the hell am I getting all the? You know. People are being very creative online with what things have changed their privacy settings. It's very funny. Different body parts and different things have changed my privacy policy. So funny.
A lot of messy.
Yeah. I mean, it's important. I know that it's going to affect, I think it's companies that do any business in Europe?
Yeah, basically, right. Yeah.
So it won't affect a ton of our companies, but it will affect some.
Yeah.
And it would have already.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
So that's not hot. Is that the two options, hot and not?
Is winner or loser?
Oh, loser.
So I said that I think winner is obviously like, you know, privacy. Yay! Like it's a good thing.
Totally.
Yeah, and like, you know, I don't want to be added to another email list when you've just emailed me and you just like, I don't want that, you know, like, chill, please. So that's what's prevented in that kind of stuff, like unscrupulous kind of like email listing adding type stuff. But obviously loser, our inboxes last week has just been mad. It's been a madness.
It just seems like they didn't have a plan.
Nobody had a plan.
Yeah.
Everybody had like a Trello thing just saying GDPR and just like right in the 25th, it was like, all right, go on the deadline, like send.
Ooh.
Yeah. So like, what about the whole privacy and social conversation? Like, I don't know if you want to get too much into it because I don't know political connects, but like, what's your feeling and sentiment about that? Zuckerberg was here recently doing a talk, not a talk, he was being essentially interrogated by EU politicians as opposed to what had happened in the States.
Mm-hmm.
And they went in a bit deeper on him. Still wouldn't be to the, you know, people taking selfies with him as well, like he was a, you know, damn celebrity and stuff.
Harry Styles.
Yeah, basically, right?
Yep.
Or Data, as they call him. Anyways, so what's your thoughts on it? Like, do you have an opinion?
Oh,
it's a big topic. I know.
It is a big topic. You have 3 minutes remaining.
Go.
Go. Talk about the most important. I guess the thing that I know about it and that I understand it, like as a consumer, you know, there's all sorts of thoughts, but I just think that it's one more example of why. I know I'm going to bring it way back, but why a fund like Backstage is important?
Yeah.
Because...
Plug it.
Well, because if you think about his profile
mm.
and you think about how he was just considered just a golden boy, all, you know, just
for out so of... so long.
Yeah. And I'm not saying that there's something wrong with him personally. Like, I don't know the dude.
Mm.
But, and I, you know, I know people around him.
Mm.
I just think that, like, he was like, there was not going to be a situation where that didn't turn out wrong because of all the institutional stuff around it.
Mm.
Like, people saw this guy who was going to make them a lot of money. I don't know. I guess I'm not saying it the way I want to say it, but it's like not, there's no diversity of thought that went into Facebook.
Yeah.
And so, of course, it's turned out like this. Like, we didn't know when or exactly what, but we knew it would.
Yeah.
And it's, you have to wonder a lot of things, but you have to wonder what would it have been? And maybe if you can't think that way, what can it be?
Mm.
Is there still a way to turn it around?
Mm.
That's what I think about mostly.
Mm.
Like, I don't want to save Facebook, but I think when I see these announcements they put out, like we're like these letters, we're so sorry. We're going to do everything we can. We're hiring 100,000 people to do something. I just wonder, like, why don't you put a few million, not even billion, a few million dollars into hiring a diverse group of, like, intellectuals to work on this problem with you, that affects, like, a tenth of the world or whatever the number
is. It's so crazy. That's like 2 billion. It's, like, bigger than the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
How hard is that? It takes me back to thinking about like CES when CES had the stripping robots, and they said, or not even that, like Peter Thiel or Elon Musk or someone, they're like people, they're sending things into the moon, you know, to the moon or to Mars and underground.
Mm.
And Peter Thiel is like,
trying to live forever.
he wants to live forever. He really wants to live forever. And he does, that is his ultimate goal. And everything that he does, including using most other humans, mostly black and brown, as human fodder, but that's a different story. They can think in those ways, but getting diversity into the
mix—that's one step too far.
It's so hard. Oh my god, you guys, it's so hard.
It's crazy.
It's like, I just don't know what to do. So I think that goes back to Zuck. I don't, you know a ton about it. So I mean, I'm sure you figured that out. But I just think like as an observer.
Mm.
You can think that it could have been
handled better.
Could
have
been handled. It absolutely could have been handled better.
So,
like a used car salesman.
A very specific question then, related to Facebook, however. So there was a controversy recently where using their ad product, you could target people exclusively based on race or exclude people based on race.
Mm-hmm.
What are your feelings regarding that? Like, because if you have a product that you're, like I say, it's a black woman's hair product, would that be morally permissible to use that ad tech? Or should that ad tech not exist because what it can be used to exclude people on the basis of race? I mean, it's a big question, really. I don't know what you...
I think it's a great question, but I think it's almost like when you think about targeted ads in general, they should be targeted, but not excluding.
Okay.
So when I think about if that same black hair product was being or were being promoted on BET,
yeah,
the house that BET is in or the salon that it's being shown in,
yeah,
there are most likely will be white people in that room, yeah, or other races in that room.
Yeah.
So they're not being exclusively targeted.
Yep.
I think it's like that. I don't know. I think it gets really sketchy and scary when you can exclude, because what is being excluded?
Completely.
Like messaging.
Yeah.
This messaging that's being excluded. That's straight.
Especially in the political realm. Yeah. Like it gets crazy.
It gets very scary.
It gets murky. Like, I mean, Amber always talk about this, and we're just like, where is this going? Like,
yeah. I mean, I can imagine it being used not only to, like, if you're a white power group, I can see it being used to, like, spread messaging within it. But I can also see it being used to target black people, perhaps, for like, polling.
Yeah.
Telling them that you're going to be arrested if you go or something like that, which would be...
The potential for misinformation is nuts. Mm-hmm. I think we'll call it a day there. Mm-hmm. We've taken up enough of your time. Mm-hmm.
Yes, you have.
We have indeed.
How dare you invite me in here with these candles and this...
You're making me sound nuts now. I
mean, I'm still here.
Yeah. So where can the people find you if they haven't found you already, which I sincerely doubt?
You can find me at Arlan Was Here, A-R-L-A-N Was Here on Twitter and Instagram, which is a Facebook property. But I'm on there hella much. And backstagecapital.com. Look at our crew, look at our headliners. That's what we call our portfolio companies.
Cool.
We are very excited. We're almost at 100. That's a big goal that we're going to be reaching soon. And where can they find you, Anastasia?
You can find me on Twitter at Sonnete, S-O-N-O-N-T-E.
Oh, oh.
Ooh, is there anything you want to shout out quickly at the end, or is that all right?
I want to give a shout out to all my homies. And all my haters.
Yeah.
You know where to find me. Both of them.
Cool. Thank you, everybody. Thanks for listening. Ciao.